Welcome to our Woodland Trust podcast. My name is Hilary Hinks, and I'm a volunteer heritage researcher working on the Ancient Woodland Restoration Project. Lawton Woods, an ancient woodland made up of 20 or more woods with different owners, is located near Lawton in East Sussex. Whilst researching this wood, Sue Redshaw, the tree warden at Lawton, told me that Tony Warburton wanted to talk to us. Tony is 86 and has lived around Lawton Woods since he was 8 years old. So Sue and I went to talk to him. It was an informal conversation, so you may hear a cup of tea being stirred, or the ticking of the grandfather clock, but you will also hear Tony sharing some fascinating memories. So without further ado, let's hear from Tony.
My first involvement was when I lived at Price's Farm, which is now Blackberry Farm, from the age of, from 1939, over there on the A22, with the Alcorn family, with which my mother was the eldest. And in those days, the woodland belonged, as we knew it, to the Earl of Chichester. Nobody else was involved, no agents, no this, no that. And when anybody on the farm needed fencing, rails, poles to hold this up, stakes, we just went into the woodland with an axe or a saw and took out whatever we wanted, and that was all right. Everything was above board. Pheasants and rabbits were a different matter.
Right. And you moved because of the war?
Yeah, only because. My father was in the territorials to help the money situation.
Yes.
So you were 8 when you moved?
I was 8, yeah, I reckon 8, 7.5, 8, I think, yeah. And the day the first siren went at Shoreham Aerodrome, he was grabbed and taken away. So yeah. Grandad, with all his knowledge of things that that mattered at the time, sent a saddle lorry to get us away from Shoreham, where the Germans would be the first people to paddle ashore.
Yes. Yeah.
And bring us to Price's Farm.
Was Price's Farm your grandfather's farm?
He was a tenant farmer under the Earl of Chichester. That was how I first got involved in the woods, was being sent in there with a saw or something to fetch whatever Grandad wanted at the time.
Yeah.
It so might that was be when you were just still a nipper?
Oh, very much a nipper, yeah. Well, I grew up very, very quickly. Dragged out of bed about 6 in the morning to milk 2 or 3 cows when I was 8 and 9. Learned very quickly. But in one way I was treated as a grown-up, which in one way was a good thing. Mm-hmm. And in another way, I probably missed out on it. I don't know. Yeah. You don't know, do you?
No.
So anyway, getting back to the woodland, at that time, the vert woods were all sort of mixture of wood, mostly wild wood. There were some good oaks in amongst it, scrub wood and all the rest of it, a horn beam. That we call the vert then, upper vert and lower vert. And this was where I spent most of my time in the wood, getting wood out. Everything on the farm that was needed was got from the wood. I mean, if it was like thatching, in those days everything was hazel for thatching.
Okay.
Apart from the straw, of course. But everything to hold the straw on was hazel, which was got with Grandad and his, I think they called them bill hooks everywhere else, but they were handbills. But that was Grandad. Grandad had special names for everything that no one had ever heard of anywhere else.
Was he a local Sussex man, or was he from...
Of course, we were dead Sussex, we are. I get accused of being West Country everywhere. East Sussex, not even West Sussex.
So you used to spend a lot of time in Upper Vert Wood and that area, and you said it, I was interested, you said it was wild wood at the time. So it was...
It was the first thing that I can remember about it being an organised thing by Earl of Chichester or whoever, but I think mostly the government.
Yeah.
Was when they started needing charcoal. And the charcoal burners came through with their great big iron tank type things, the old-fashioned way of doing it, I suppose, and cut down all sorts of wood except softwood.
Oh,
all this hornbeam and stuff. And that cleared the wood of what we used to call rubbish, but was rubbish that was usable for farm use, for rails and thatching and all the rest of it.
So what do they need the charcoal for?
Oh, ammunition and all sorts of things. Now, I mean, it's used for what? Cooking sausages. But in those days, it was gunpowder, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Although I say gunpowder, I think it was at the very tail end of the war.
Mid-1940s?
Mid-40s, yes.
Did they make the charcoal in the wood?
They burnt it in the wood and then bagged it up and lorries came and took the bags away.
How long were they there for?
Two, 3 years, 4 years, maybe.
Quite a long time. So they basically...
Well, there was a lot of wood to go through. I think they got to the stage after perhaps 2 years where it wasn't so urgent.
Yes.
That they only took what was best for charcoal then.
Exactly.
What softwood there was, which weren't plantations then, they were on, well, I don't know, seed, I don't know how they started. That's before my time. But there was some fir, and then once it was cleared, that's when they came through organised again.
Yeah.
And started the plantations.
Okay.
And the plantations, later on in 1957, when I started working for the Chichester Estate Forestry, that was their first job of planting up all these woods that had been cleared.
Ah.
And we had a way of planting.
Right.
There were about five or six of us. We all had these bags, not bags, bags.
Yeah.
Bags hung round our neck with all these Scotch pine, larch, Christmas trees. And you did them in order. I think you did something like two Christmas trees, a Scotch pine, a larch, and then back again and that way and that way.
Wow.
So that the first things that came out from this size were Christmas trees.
Right.
Which they were beginning to use trees for income then. When the softwood was beginning to grow, and every foot was a certain price. And then as it got bigger, that sort of size, pit props. You heard of pit props?
Yes.
They were a certain length, I think 4.5 feet. I think there was 2-3 different lengths.
I'm just trying to date when this was happening.
This was just after the war.
After the war, yeah.
Just slightly a year or two after the war. Pit props.
Yeah.
Mainly, well, for what they're called, pit props.
Yeah.
Pit. And they were all cut exactly to length. I can remember Park Lane from nearly from one end to the other being 4.5, 5 foot, 6 foot length. Pit props in their stacks and lengths, stacked up as high as you could reach, because in those days it wasn't very mechanised.
You said you remember horses bringing out the timber.
Early years, yeah. End of the war, and I forget where they kept the horses now. Must have been at Halland.
Mm.
Also, for getting those pit props out, railway trucks. Mm-hmm. They put the railway track down in there. But they didn't have horses or engines. It was all pushed by hand. And it was many, many, many years later before it got really organised. And we had tractors come in with great big trailers on the back of them. And on the front, you had a saw. And they used to sit in there, the boys sitting there. We used to say, God, you don't know what work is, mate, sitting in there with your buttons. Yeah, they used to come up to a tree.
Buttons.
Grab the tree, saw would cut it off, lift the tree up, put it over there and lay it down. So
when would that have been?
When we were living at Buckle, 1963, yeah.
That was Tony Warburton talking to us about some of the fascinating memories he has of the ancient woodland called Lawton Woods. Tony's memories are not only fascinating and inspiring, but are also still relevant today. Without talking to Tony, hidden gems like the historic rail track may never have been unearthed. And now there are even plans to consider reintroducing the rail track to the woodland. Thank you for listening. We hope this has inspired you to visit your local woodland and to create your own special memories.